Chapter 16. The Margrave of Underthrace was naturally apologetic for the inconvenience they had suffered on their way through Europa's waters.
"There was a time when Regals stood for something," he lamented. "We had our differences, yes, our disagreements over territory and negotiating rights with the outside, but we had far more in common than we had to divide us. We knew where we stood with each other. These hooligans barely know they're born. How dare they charge you to pass through my waters?"
"I don't suppose they'll do it again," Carnu said.
"They've had their gentle warnings," the Margrave said. "Unfortunately, we're long past the point of reasoning with these ruffians. Force is the only language they understand, and if it isn't brute force, you're wasting your time. You've done me a favor. I would have had to nip those incursions in the bud sooner or later, so it might as well be today. I'm just sorry you had to get caught up in all of that unpleasantness."
"I almost thought we wouldn't make it," Nyssa said. "Those consolidation ships in close orbit. Is that all connected with the trouble down here?"
"If they touch this moon, they will learn a valuable lesson."
"I hope for your sake," Carnu said, "that the lesson isn't too painful for either party."
"Spoken like a true ambassador. No water so troubled that it can't be oiled."
They were breathing the dry air of Underthrace, in a room furnished for the needs of outside visitors. The Margrave's Regals had escorted Fall of Night all the way in, easing through a thickening forest of submarine structures until they came to a kind of enclosed glade, a bubble of ocean in the fortified heart of Underthrace. The Regals had docked Nyssa's ship and connected an underwater airlock so that Nyssa and Carnu could disembark. The Margrave remained fully immersed, under deep ocean conditions. In the middle of the room, rising from floor to ceiling, was a glass tube armored to withstand a differential pressure of hundreds of megapascals. The glass was tinted, the Margrave no more than a shadowy form. Carnu made out a suggestion of some kind of headdress or helmet, a hard, ridged shape, but he could not decide if it was an adornment or some kind of bony extrusion of the Margrave's altered anatomy. Of the face, he saw only the glint of goggles, above a kind of mandrel-like snout or mask.
"I never meant to cause you any trouble," Carnu said. "There's been enough of that already where my family's concerned."
"The trouble was coming whether we liked it or not, so please do not feel bad on my account, Carnu."
"Wait," Nyssa said, raising a hand. "Let's clear this up right now, shall we? Carnu is my guest. He only came along for the ride. So can we please stop talking as if this visit is for his benefit, not mine?"
Carnu shifted in his black and purple chair. It was scarcely any bother to stand in Europa's gravity, but the chairs had been provided as a courtesy. The guests had even been served chai, brought to them by air-breathing aquatics.
"The art is here," Carnu confirmed. "It's been here since Sunday first brought it to Europa. That's the reason for Nyssa's visit."
"Good," she said. "At least we agree on that."
"You'd have come here with or without me," Carnu went on. "But because I knew of your interest in Sunday, and Sunday's connection with Europa, I knew you would eventually make this trip. It was imperative that I travel with you. You had the ship, and the legal clearance to land on Europa. I had none of those things, and if I had begun to seek them, well, there were already enough questions surrounding my integrity. We could not stand that sort of scrutiny."
"We?"
Nyssa and the Margrave asked simultaneously, the moment of unity surprising them both.
"The machines and I, the robots of Mars."
"The Margrave,
Nyssa still doubts me. I don't blame her in the slightest, so would you mind telling her about the ship?"
The form in the water did not answer directly. Nyssa looked at Kanu, and for an instant, he was on the cusp of doubting himself as well. Perhaps this was the moment when his delusions reached the point of fracture, their grand absurdity becoming apparent even to Kanu. But, the Margrave said,
"You'll forgive me for thinking no one would ever come. It has been such a long time."
"It has," Kanu agreed. "But now we need it. Is the ship intact?"
"Yes."
"Wait," Nyssa said. "What ship? What are you talking about?"
Kanu tried to answer as reasonably and openly as he could.
"It's around 100 years old. It was built here out of sight and left to repair and upgrade itself as necessary. It was fast for its day and is even faster now."
"You lying!"
But then she shook her head, words inadequate to express her disgust at him, at the degree to which she had been used. Kanu knew he deserved worse. He had done a vile, hateful thing.
"There was no other way, and I haven't turned traitor against humanity. This concerns us all, flesh, blood, steel."
"What do you know?"
the Margrave asked.
"The robots are still confined to Mars, but their information-gathering capability is much more extensive than any of us ever suspected. And they found something, Margrave. A signal. From another solar system. It wasn't even aimed at this system. It was picked up by human listening systems around Crucible. But in the process, it also came to the attention of the robot's intelligence-gathering apparatus. News of the message was kept secret by Crucible's government, but it's already reached the robots on Mars."
The Margrave stirred in his tube.
"But this is of interest to the machines because..."
"The most probable source of that signal, at least according to their analysis, is another artificial intelligence. Years ago, a simulation of Eunice Akinya traveled to Crucible along with the first colonists. The Watchkeepers permitted human settlement on Crucible on the condition that 3 subjects went with them into deeper interstellar space. The Eunice construct was one. The other 2 were my half-mother, Chiku Green, and an elephant named Dakota. A machine, a woman, an elephant. The Trinity, they were called. The organic members of the Trinity may or may not still be alive. Who knows? But the construct was effectively immortal. For the robots on Mars, this realization represents opportunities on 2 fronts. They can re-establish ties with the closest thing they have to a creator. Communion, if you will. It's also a chance to come to a better understanding of the Watchkeepers. They're bound to have communicated with Eunice on some level, and she's bound to have learned something about them. The possibility of gaining insight into what the Watchkeepers want of us is as significant to humans as it is to robots."
"So your intention is to respond to that signal?"
the Margrave said.
"For which you need your ship. But only Nyssa could get you to Europa. I can understand how she might feel... aggrieved."
Kanu turned to face his companion.
"Nyssa, no apology can begin to atone for what I've done to you. You've every right to feel mistreated, to loathe the moment I came back into your life. But you must understand the stakes. We stand at a threshold, all of us. People, merfolk, machines. You and I."
He looked down at his knotted fingers, shaking his head.
"I don't expect forgiveness. But if you can at least bring yourself to understand that what I've done..."
"There's nothing to understand. If you trusted me, if you felt anything for me as a human being, you'd have told me the truth from the moment we met."
I didn't even know the truth myself at that point,
Kanu said, persisting despite a rising sense of hopelessness.
I wasn't allowed to access my own memories. I thought we'd met by chance. I was overjoyed. I loved you, Nissa. I still do.
No. You find me useful, or did, until I'd served my purpose.
A moment, please,
the Margrave said, not impolitely.
We have much to discuss, I know, but I must attend to a matter of immediate and pressing importance. Will you excuse me momentarily?
Kanu watched the Margrave descend back down the tinted shaft and disappear beneath the level of the floor. Oddly, now that the glass contained nothing but water, he was more acutely aware of the pressure it held back. He imagined it shattering, Europa reclaiming this room quicker than either of them could blink.
I died,
he said eventually, when Nissa said nothing.
On Mars. The accident was genuine, and I had no right to survive it. It was only by the grace of the machines that I was put back together. I had a friend among them, a robot called Swift. When they restored enough of my mind that I could understand my predicament, Swift offered me a choice. It was very simple.
To live or die?
Nissa asked finally.
No. To live or to live. Swift said that the machines would do what they could for me and send me back to the world of people, and that would be an end to it. I'd still be tainted, of course. I'd still lose my career, my sense of purpose, and my colleagues who died on Mars would still be gone. Shall I tell you about Garudi Dalal? She loved poetry. I took her belongings back to her mother and father in Madras.
But Kanu sighed, beyond explaining himself.
I believed Swift, trusted him. I thought I could help the machines. That's why I agreed to the second option. To allow a part of them to escape Mars inside me, doing what they could not do alone, allowing them to use me the way I used you, life again, but life serving a deeper purpose.
You agreed to it,
she said flatly. He nodded, accepting the distinction.
I chose to put my trust in Swift. And this is where it has brought me.
A conscience clear, then?
Kanu gave a final defeated shrug.
I know there's nothing I can say to fix this. But I am sorry it happened, and with all my heart, I wish you well. These last a few weeks.
You regret that they happened?
No. I regret that it took me so long to find you again. I regret that it took Mars, my death, and Swift's bargain to make it happen. I regret losing you in the first place, and I regret that this will always stand between us, worse than anything that ever happened before. I am truly sorry, Nissa, but there is nothing more I can offer beyond my apologies.
After a moment, he added,
"You needn't worry about your return. The Margrave will take good care of you and make sure you reach the outside in one piece.
That's it, then. My usefulness is over. But you very thoughtfully considered my future welfare?
It's not like that.
I'll tell you what it is like.
Nissa stiffened her jaw. Her voice was calm initially, but anger was building behind it.
You saw me as a means to an end. A convenience. Had there been anyone else with the ability to get you to Europa, you'd have lied and schemed your way around them as well.
That isn't how I feel.
I don't give a shit how you feel.
Now her voice turned into a snarl.
You've treated
me like a piece of disposable equipment, a tool, something you use once and throw away. And no matter what crocodile tears you manage to dredge up now, no matter what ersatz contrition, you went into this with cold-blooded calculation. You knew exactly what had to be done and exactly who had to be manipulated. You thought it through, blended like a campaign. The happy accident of us meeting? Two old lovers reconnecting? Sleeping with me? You probably have it all worked out on a diagram.
All of that was sincere.
You're a snake, Kanu. An emotionless reptile. It sickens me that I ever thought you possessed a human conscience. And you know what? You haven't just lied to me. You haven't just betrayed me and wasted my time. You fucked up my work. You fucked up everything I planned to do on Europa. Years of planning, years of devotion to the memory of your stupid dead grandmother and her fucking art.
I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. She parroted him with a sneer. That's all you've got, isn't it? But what more should I expect? You're a diplomat. You're used to words making everything right. Not now, though. You don't get out of this with a few spoken charms. But why am I even bothering? Why am I deluding myself that this conversation means a damn thing to you? As soon as you're on your ship, you'll be off and away, and you won't have to give me a second's consideration after that.
I will. You're wrong about me. Wrong about how I feel. If there's a way I can make this right.
There isn't. Not now. Not ever.
A rising piston-like movement caught his eye. It was the Margrave returning to the room. Kanu's vision had adapted to the gloom since his arrival, and he spied more of the Margrave's dark anatomy and regalia, gaining a clearer sense of bony integuments and hard, horn-like growths.
I had hoped that they would see more sense,
their host said.
Our rash friends, the ones who hampered your arrival.
The ones you skewered?
Kanu asked.
We only skewered one,
the Margrave countered, as if this was acceptable.
The ringleader, to send a message to the others, not to trouble my jurisdictional waters again.
Nyssa asked.
And did it work?
Not quite as I had intended. I'm afraid that they have been gathering in greater numbers around the limits of Underthrace ever since your arrival. Of course, this happens from time to time, and they are always rebuffed. But the present concentration, I regret that I may have precipitated something closer to civil war.
Are we in danger?
Kanu asked.
No, not in the slightest. Underthrace will hold. The lines will not be crossed.
The king's grip was faltering, Kanu sensed. It might have been faltering for months or years, but their arrival must have quickened some underlying process of collapse.
Can you guarantee it, Margrave?
As my life is my word. The consolidation forces are of no concern to you either.
Kanu looked at Nyssa, then back at the Margrave.
What about them?
We've landed. Six of their enforcement ships are now on our ice. I believe they intend to exploit the internal difficulties we are currently facing, foolish beyond words, and displaying their utter contempt for the mutual respect of treaties and rights.
This isn't a coincidence, is it?
Nyssa said.
The Consolidation hasn't just randomly chosen this exact moment to retake Europa. We've brought it about just by coming here.
You may have provided the destruction they were hoping for,
the Margrave said.
Nyssa's safety is paramount,
Kanu said.
Whatever it takes, she mustn't come to harm.
Nyssa can take care of herself,
Nyssa said.
In fact, I'm leaving now, before this whole fucking moon blows up.
What about the art?
The Margrave asked.
You think I give a damn about that now? Get me back to Fall of Night. If I have to fight my way to the ice, I will.
The art belongs to Nyssa now,
Kanu said, rising effortlessly from his chair.
Look after it, Margrave. It has, when she returns, and I know she will. one day. Nyssa spent years putting this trip together. She deserves better than to have it end like this.
Will she be in trouble? The Margrave asked. Your departure will not go unnoticed, Colonel, especially not now.
When I'm on my way and safely out of reach, I'll issue a statement clarifying that Nyssa was an innocent party in all this.
If he'd expected some token of gratitude from this promised gesture, none was forthcoming. Her anger was still there, contained like the water in the glass, megapascals of it.
Don't waste your precious breath, Kanu.
The Margrave escorted Kanu deeper into the bowels of Underthrace, until at last they reached the flooded vault in which the Akinia ship lay waiting, entombed these past 100 years. They viewed it from a gallery, floodlights scratching out across the water, to compensate for the feebleness of Kanu's eyes. The Margrave, floating next to him in an extension of his water-filled pipe, had placed another pair of goggles over those he already wore. This must be a sun-bright blaze to him, Kanu thought, like the inside of a furnace.
Thank you for looking after it.
I can't promise it will work. That's your business. But we have kept the ship in the minimally powered configuration your family stipulated, and supplied it with the raw materials it requested to upgrade itself. If it fails to function, I would rather not accept the blame.
If it fails, I doubt very much there'll be anyone around to parcel out blame.
The ship had been built for compactness, but even Kanu was surprised by how small it looked, enclosed within the walls of this larger structure. It had been conceived for exploration rather than the conveyance of cargo or passengers. 1 kilometer tall was his recollection, but it looked smaller to his eyes. It was torpedo-shaped, a cylinder with rounded ends and a few angular bumps and protrusions to mar its basic symmetry.
I'd like to go aboard.
Of course, it's your ship.
Does it have a name?
Not yet.
The Margrave showed him to the connecting bridge. The aquatic could come no further. The ship was not equipped for water breathers. But Kanu had no great need of a guide. As he stepped aboard, the ship recognized him like an old friend. It was reading his DNA and his body's morphology, plumbing the deep mysteries of his mind, verifying to its own satisfaction that he met the required criteria. Akinia. Thus satisfied, the ship opened its secrets to him. It was still cold in the corridors and passageways, but light and warmth were now returning. Displays came on as Kanu walked past them, scrolling updates and complicated diagrams. He had never been aboard this ship before, had played no direct part in its construction, but it felt as familiar as if he was wandering the hallways of a childhood home. Kanu found his way to the command deck. It was 4/5 of the way along the ship, near the rounded front. The deck would have been spacious for a small crew. For one man, it was outlandish. But the deck was also extremely simple in its layout, its provisions reduced to the elegant essentials. A single chair, a bank of controls in a horseshoe configuration, an illusion of wide sweeping windows. In fact, as Kanu well knew, the room was dozens of meters in from the ship's skin. He surveyed subtle hints of East African influence in the patterning and coloration of his surroundings. Inlays of wood and metal, glowing filaments of green and red and yellow. A selection of small black sculptures set into lit alcoves. Maasai figures, Kanu thought, wondering if they might be Sunday's handiwork. A bas-relief design of blocky interlocking elephants had been worked into the black framework of his chair. A map of the world radiated out from beneath it, with Africa at its focus. Kanu settled into the chair, which automatically slithered a restraint across his lap, then tightened it. The horseshoe controls moved obligingly closer to his fingertips. He stared at the sweep of displays and keypads with a sort of numbed recognition, as if seeing it in the first moments of waking.
Kanu Akinia,
he stated, as if following a silent prompt.
Assuming control. Request departure readiness.
The ship answered in the tongue with which he had addressed it. It spoke Swahili with a soothing tone, as if there could be no problem, no contingency, for which it were not magnificently equipped. Welcome, Kanu. Systems are transitioning to operational condition. Final fault checks and calibration procedures are now in progress. Chibeza core is initializing. Estimated time to departure readiness, 6 hours, 13 minutes. Give me an option for departure within 2 to 3 hours. In fact, present me with a range of options and associated risk factors. A moment, please, Kanu. The console presented him with his choices. They ranged from an immediate departure, which brought with it a 15% chance of losing the ship completely, to the more reasonable alternative of waiting the full 6 hours, by which point the likelihood of losing the ship would be negligible, at least to a fault of its own making. If he insisted on leaving in 3 hours, the likelihood was down to a tolerable 2%, odds he could live with, given the stakes. The console chimed, and a voice spoke from it.
Garu, this is the Margrave. I'm afraid I had to leave you for a moment. Matters have taken another turn, and I think you need to be aware of it.
Kanu pressed himself back into his seat, bracing for the worst.
Go on.
The consolidation are through. Their ships are still on the ice, but they must have brought high-speed tunneling devices and submarine combat equipment with them. My agents report 3 or 4 separate points of entry into the ocean, as well as an increase in their orbital presence. They are bringing in forces from across Jovian space and further afield.
Kanu nodded. The news exactly as bad as he had feared.
So there are consolidation forces in the ocean, in addition to the other eagles trying to batter their way into Underthrace.
Things have indeed come to a pretty pass.
If this is in any way our doing, my doing, you have my sincere apologies.
We will endure, Kanu, have no doubt of that. In the meantime, though, you might wish to leave sooner rather than later.
Things are that bad.
I cannot guarantee the security of Underthrace. When it falls, it will happen quickly. You should be aware of that.
My safety is secondary. It's Nyssa who matters. She hates me now, and frankly, I don't blame her. I've treated her badly, Margrave. Inexcusably. But I couldn't see any other way to get here. I don't want her to come to any harm on my account.
Let me worry about Nyssa. I have taken a personal interest in her welfare and will continue to do so.
Kanu allowed himself the meagre consolation of knowing she would be well looked after, at least to the limits of the Margrave's power. It did nothing to lessen his remorse, or his sorrow at the terms of their farewell, but if he could trust that her safety was taken care of, it would be one less thing on his mind.
Thank you.
I wish you had parted on better terms, Kanu.
What's done is done,
he said, returning his attention to the console. The options it had given were still there, and the numbers had scarcely changed. What had been a 14% chance of disaster if he left immediately now dropped to a 12.6. Even as he watched, the digits shifted again. The ship was doing everything it could to better his chances. Was a risk factor of 1 in 10 tolerable? He had cheated death once. Did that allow him a different perspective on such matters? He did not think so. He might be old, but these last few weeks with Nyssa had given him every incentive to keep living. Equally, he could not wait too long.